The next matter on for oral argument this morning is Cobbs versus Evans, Superintendent Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. As you're getting situated, counsel, I'll just remind you of our rules. Each of you, I think she left her water.
She did, Your Honor.
Yeah, maybe the marshal will collect that.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Each of you will have 15 minutes to present your argument with an additional 5 minutes for appellant's counsel to use for. Please be mindful of those restrictions, which are indicated in the lectern. A light and a clock in the lectern should indicate how much time you have remaining. Please also recognize that for your convenience, there's a button in front of the lectern that allow you to raise or lower it to your height for your convenience. And finally, pardon me?
Does it go that low?
It does. There's a button right in front.
It does go that low.
And please state your name as you commence each leg of your argument for the sake of our audio recording presentation. With that, counsel for appellant, you may begin whenever you are ready.
May it please the court. My name is Christopher Wynn, and I represent the appellant in this matter, Vincent James Cobbs. I'd like to provide the court with a quick outline of what I intend to discuss today. Specifically, I'll start with the factual background on the matter. I'll discuss the issue with the order that we are appealing, including the district court's findings. And then I'll move on to the record, providing the evidence and giving rise to the issue of Mr. Cobbs' appeal. So on April 13th, 2006, appellant Vincent Cobbs was charged with one count of first degree and two counts of second degree criminal sexual conduct with offense dates that ranged between January of 1999 and 2004. Mr. Cobbs did plead guilty to count one and count three of the complaint with offense dates of January 1st, 1999. On March 15th, 2007, Mr. Cobbs was sentenced to a stay of execution of 144-month sentence for 30 years and a 58-month sentence for 25 years and placed on sex offender conditional release for a period of 5 years with an order that he serve 365 days.
We pause you just for a moment only to let you know that we've had the full opportunity to read the facts and the procedure. If you'd like to spend more time discussing those, you certainly can if it's relevant to your argument. Otherwise, if you'd like to jump into your legal argument, you're free to do so. I just wanted to let you know.
Your Honor, when we look at the standards here, this court reviews an interpretation and an application of a statute de novo. And in this particular instance, the statute at issue is the Predatory Offender Registration Statute 243.166. And at issue is the offense date for Mr. Cobbs.
Now, there's one reference to a 1999 offense date, but what does the rest of the record inform us as to the continuing nature of his offenses and the dates that are relevant?
So, Your Honor, it is my understanding that there are some documents that are contained in the record. I would contest the admissibility of some of those documents, but with regard to...
Why?
Your Honor, the BCA is not the record holder for the court's documents, and there's nothing suggesting that the documents that were placed before the court were, in fact, property of the BCA. And, in fact,
Did you object to... This was on summary judgment, essentially, right?
It was, Your Honor.
Okay. And did you raise this before the district court?
I did not raise this issue before the district court.
So I think what we see in the record is... you say it's an offense date of... only the first date. And I think you say that by virtue of what record tells us that that's the only date, in your view.
Your Honor, I think there are several records, and I think that the first and the easiest one to point to is the Minnesota Court Records Online demonstrate that the offense date is January 1st, 1999.
What record in particular in the appellate record would we look at to say?
Thank you, Judge. Within my addendum, I have provided a copy of the sentencing documents for Mr. Cobbs that were filed, I believe it was April 15th of 2007.
So the warrant of commitment. My question is, I mean, when we look at, I mean, the two, the charges, there's the first degree against one victim, the second, the count one. Second degree, the same victim was not, there was no conviction on, presumably because the first degree was, there was conviction. So that one was dismissed in the plea. And then there's victim two, and that was second degree under sub H, Romanet 3, which requires multiple acts over an extended period of time. That could not have occurred on one date. And when you look at the, I don't believe, and when you look at the complaint describes for that victim the years 2000 to, I think, 2004.
Sure. And Your Honor, I think that, one, I think it could have occurred. Certainly multiple offenses can be committed in the same day.
And that can satisfy multiple offenses over an extended period of time? That's what the statute requires.
Your Honor, even if not, if we were looking at, say, a period of between January 1st, 1999, and July 30th of 2000, we still would be operating under the same statute.
Was there a transcript of the plea hearing that provided?
Thank you, Your Honor. We did attempt to obtain a statute with regard to that plea hearing, and unfortunately, the Stearns District Court had provided us that was no longer a part of their retention schedule, and it was no longer available.
So that's not available in a district court or to us?
It is not, but what is available to us is kind of the what I would describe as like a silhouette of this, right? And the reason I would call it such is even in the absence of evidence, we can see some of the evidence and part of the record that is kind of shaped around what the agreement was with the state. Specifically, what I'm talking about is with regard to the transcript that is a part of our addendum, and that transcript is specifically the probation violation hearing. And it in reading the probation violation hearing, what becomes clear is that the court and the county attorney's office are attempting to prevent not a change necessarily in with regard to Mr. Cobb's registration period, but a reset of that registration period. And if Mr. Cobb's had been required to register for life, there would be no effort, there would be nothing worthy of an attempt to try and prevent the reset of that registration period.
What would have reset that if he had been committed to the
even if he had spent an individual day in jail, if he had been sentenced or if he had been held for his probation violation, it is my understanding that his registration period would have reset and he would have been required to register for an additional period of 10 years.
And so just to be clear, your view is that this was a 10-year registration period that expired in 2017. Is that correct?
It would have been 2018 because his period of confinement would not have counted.
The initial confinement.
That is correct, Your Honor.
By what measure do we look at in this case, which is against the commissioner, the district court's determination that count two occurred on or after, is it August 1, 2000? Is that the key?
That is the key operative date. Yes, Judge.
How do we determine that based on the record? Because if you look at the complaint, it could have been. So what is it, a clear error? Is it a factual finding? What is that?
So, Your Honor, I wish I had a solid answer for you. With regard to the things that were available to us, because of the age of the case, that information was particularly limited. And so trying to even locate the sentencing judge and these kinds of things, those were all difficult, but endeavors that we did make as a part of this. And mind you that we're talking about an issue here for summary judgment, we never got into a point of discovery, and I think that this particular issue with regard to that standard or whether or not there was any evidence in existence at the time that would allow for the case to have proceeded might give rise to the decision to have a summary judgment granted be premature.
Is that an argument you made in your briefing to us?
It was not, Your Honor. I think that on its face, what we see is that And the point that I would attempt to drive home today is that his conviction was for an offense that was committed on or about January 1st, 1999. And because of that, the registration period that came into effect on August 1st of 2000 was retroactively applied to his conduct. And unfortunately, the district court did not provide us with a record for making its determination as a part of its ruling that it was not applied retroactively.
Just so we're clear, the district court based its determination that the offense dates were between 1999 and 2004. So I gather it's your position that the record does not support that factual basis.
That is correct, because the plain language of the statute, Your Honor, is not only charged with, but and convicted of. And that conjunctive portion of the statute requires that he have been convicted for an offense that occurred after August 1st, 2000.
Well, charged with, but so explain any relationship then in that legal question between the charge and the plea.
So Your Honor, here, Mr. Cobbs was pro se as a part of all of these. I should say all of the proceedings as a matter of his criminal case. Given his age at the time that he was experiencing the prosecution, he didn't have the resources necessary, and he wouldn't have qualified for a public defender because there are...
Right, but as a legal question, I'm trying to get a sense of the relationship between the charge and the plea as it bears on the argument that you're making.
Sure. The relationship between the charge and the plea is severed when the facts that are on the record provide for an entry of a plea that is different than what is than what is contained within the contents of the complaint. And so the and conviction portion of the statute, and unfortunately we do not have case law that is on point to this issue.
Is it the plea agreement, or is it just the warrant of commitment that you, if you had to show us where you say the date of conviction or the date of the offense for purposes of conviction, what would you point to besides the warrant of commitment that you have in your addendum?
Sure. So besides the sentencing documents themselves, Minnesota Court Records Online has an offense date that is listed. I did not provide the court with a printout.
So the record on appeal to us, it's the warrant of commitment.
That is it is the warrant of commitment. Yes.
Okay. And you're saying that doesn't. That's different from the complaint. The complaint has a range. The warrant of commitment has a date, and that date, you're saying, yeah. I understand your argument about multiple acts over extended period of time could have gone from, when is it nine one, date of offense of 1/1/99, to, it could have been accomplished before August 1, 2000. But even that's not said. I mean, it just says one day, and that is really quite inconsistent with a conviction under H3. It says that even for the H3. That doesn't make sense on its face, I don't think.
And Your Honor, I don't disagree with that, but also the time to appeal that issue had long lapsed, where his plea had been entered back in 2007. And so
the time for who to appeal what issue?
Sure. So with regard to the sufficiency regarding the dates, right? And so if we were to concede that an extended period of time could not be a period of one day, then at the time of his appeal, whether or not there were facts on the record that would allow for that, he would not have been able, that wouldn't have been something that he would have been able to address because of...
Alternatively, it's just that whoever filled out the form put in 1/1/99 from that doesn't actually reflect what was pleaded to.
So, Your Honor, I can appreciate that inference, but similarly, that inference, the opposite inference is demonstrated by the probation violation hearing for the transcript that was provided, where they are attempting to navigate the reset of Mr. Cobb's registration period.
If in fact, since you have a minute left, if in fact it's not retroactive, we were to decide the district court did not err by deciding that this offense extended past August 1, 2000, do you have a case left for why this should be 10-year versus lifetime?
Yes. If it's, The short answer is if it is found that his conduct and the part of the criminal proceedings demonstrate that his conviction, not his conduct, we are not here today for his conduct. We are here today for his conviction. If his conviction is demonstrated to have been from conduct that is past August 1st, no, there would not be a case for Mr. Cobbs. And therein lies the issue, is that the standard requires for summary judgment that the record be found in favor of the non-movement at the time.
So what's the remedy? Let's assume you're correct. I mean, your argument is that your client should have received a summary judgment decision in his favor. Why wouldn't the remedy be to send it back to the district court for an opportunity to have more discovery so we can get at the facts that might be disputed later on?
That absolutely may be the remedy, Your Honor.
All right. Well, your time has expired. You will have an additional 5 minutes to use for rebuttal.
Thank you, Judge.
Thank you. Counsel for respondent.
Good morning.
Good morning.
May it please the court, counsel, I'm Assistant Attorney General Angela Kiza, appearing on behalf of the respondent BCA in this matter. I would like to start off by addressing a couple of things that came up in his argument. First of all, there was discovery provided in this case, at least from us. We provided everything that we had to the appellant in this case. And to the district court, along with our motion for summary judgment, was an affidavit from a representative of the BCA attesting to the fact that she had provided the entire BCA file to our office and that the exhibits that we provided were official BCA records in this case. So that's what the court had. We also attempted to get transcripts, and because of the retention schedule, we're unable to get transcripts of the plea and sentencing. And what 243-166 provides at the time that somebody is required to register is that the court provide complaints and sentencing documents. So that's initially what the BCA would have received under the statute. The complaint makes clear in the probable cause section that these offenses went from 1999 to 2004, that counts 2 and 3 were based on those continuing offenses. And by definition, those counts were continuing offenses. There's nothing in the record to indicate that there was an agreement that it was only that one date. There's nothing in the record to indicate that they stopped right before the 2000 change in the statute. In fact, the plea petition itself, in it, the appellant acknowledged the offense dates, the entire offense dates from 1999 to 2004, and that is in the record. The only thing in the record that indicates a single date is the judgment or what the sentencing documents, the notes from court, I believe. And, you know, they're an administrative document, and they certainly maybe reflect what the count one date was, but it doesn't reflect what the continuing offense date was.
Well, for some purposes of summary judgment, without the plea and sentencing transcript, how can we be certain that the offense date went beyond the 2000, the date in 2000 that would have.
Well, I think the court can rely on the documents that it has in front of it, which is the criminal complaint and the plea petition both indicate very clearly what the offense dates was. And as Judge Smith pointed out, by definition, a conviction under that count three is a continuing offense by definition of, in the statute.
Right, but it may not necessarily be a continuing offense beyond the period that's necessary to...
Right. I mean, I think you have to be able to rely on the criminal complaint and the charge dates as far as that continuing offense is concerned and the plea petition in this case.
You recognize the possibility that at the plea hearing, the defendant might have limited the breadth of the behavior.
Theoretically, yes. Was there any evidence of that? No. I mean, he didn't even submit an affidavit along with his motion for summary judgment saying that happened. So there, we have no evidence that it's anything other than the 1999 to the 2004
dates. Right, as to the appellant's motion for summary judgment, but for the BCA's motion for summary judgment, I mean, there has to be undisputed facts in order to support the district court's decision.
There's no evidence to the contrary of what is in the documents as far as the complaint and the plea petition go. So
your argument is that you move for summary judgment, the responding party didn't submit anything that would create a genuine disputed material fact as to whether count two extended beyond August 1, 2000.
Correct. And when they made their motion, they also submitted nothing to show that it would be different dates. And the court justifiably relied on the official complaint and the plea petition in this case.
So if we were to conclude that there's not enough to support summary judgment for either party, then what? It goes back for, I guess, more digging around, but I gather there's nothing to find in the digging around, or the parties have already discovered it.
Yeah, there's nothing to find. So I think it's a legal issue for this court. I don't know if the trial court erred. We don't believe the trial court erred legally, of course. So
what do
I don't know what it would do to send it back.
I mean, I'm just wondering what a trial would look like and what evidence, what witnesses would come forward and what the testimony could be. Based upon the record, there doesn't seem to be much other than inferences that can be drawn.
Right.
Apropos of that, what does one do, what significance does that probation revocation hearing have? Were they late? It appears that there's some laboring under misapprehension about the date.
That's correct. And I believe that happened before the BCA realized the error in the calculation or in the application of the... And we didn't submit anything on that because that happens when he first registered, so we didn't have, the information on how that initially was done. But I imagine it was kind of the same mistake of that count one and, the date on the count one. But... I don't think the probation violation hearing means anything except that at that point they thought that he was on a 10-year to land of registration, and if he would have been incarcerated, then that would have been extended another 10 years. So they were trying to avoid that, but I don't think it says anything about, and if you look at the transcript, they don't say anything about, at the time of the plea, we said it was these certain dates. I think it was just a misapprehension about the proper registration term.
Looking at the notices that were sent, annually, apparently, there are three things at the top, begin registration date, end registration date, reason, end. And then it gives the dates that you're familiar with, the start of the registration, the end of the... And then 10 years. Does that, even as it's written on its face, make sense? I'm not even sure, what to make out of that as written.
And I don't know because that's, it's administrative, how they administratively track things at the BCA. And so if somebody comes in and initially under the statute, if it's not a lifetime offense, initially it would be 10 years from the initial registration in conjunction with the offense, or till the end of their probation, whichever occurs later. So when somebody like him comes in with a probation that could be longer than that 10 years, I think they have had to set those alternative dates again because they didn't apply the lifetime that should have actually applied. So that's what I think that is, and that's why there are two dates, and it's confusing, but...
It is. I mean, even if that were a 10-year, it's hard to read and understand it.
Right.
What that means.
Yes.
Okay.
And I cannot explain why it was done that way, or I'm not even sure. So much of it is, I think, automated, so it's hard to know how that comes up. I don't think I really have anything else unless the court has additional questions.
Does not appear.
That I'll just rely on my brief as far as the constitutional arguments are concerned.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any rebuttal? Thank you. And again, just state your name for the record for the audio recording.
Christopher Nguyen, N-G-U-Y-E-N, for the appellant. Judge Smith, I apologize. Please excuse my nerves a little bit. I don't do many appeals, and I don't think I've even seen an in-person appeal in probably 5 years.
You're doing fine.
So with you had asked originally whether or not there was anything left, if you were to find that there's something that extended to the date, et cetera, or what in the record provides that it was a 10-year period. And the fact is the respondent's own notices to the defendant for a period of years. Every single year he was provided this notice. And that didn't change until the year that his registration was supposed to end. So 2007, 2008, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, all the way until 2018, he is provided a notice every single year as a reminder that he is required to register and that there is an end period of registration. And when he was provided the 30-year period of probation by the court on his criminal case, that 2037 end date is the end of his registration. And so that's when his registration would have ended, but for...
Therefore what, as a matter of fact? Are you suggesting there's some factual inference?
There is a factual inference. The factual inference is that it was a 10-year period to end in 2037 because it either goes for a period of 10 years or till the end of his registration.
And what's the fact, though? What's the factual inference that you're saying can be true?
The factual inference is that there wouldn't have been an end date. There wouldn't have been an end date, and there are only two periods of registration contained within the statute. There is a 10-year period. There is a lifetime period of registration.
I think the inference would have to be, for you to succeed, that, in fact, he did not commit second-degree criminal sexual conduct under H3 after August 1st. BCA's listing that means that that's not what he did.
And that is, and ultimately, with regard to the conviction, Your Honor, it has to be and convicted of. And that is unfortunately where we're left with this kind of shadow of an inference that what exists is...
The difficulty with the shadow of the inference, I think, and I like your use of terms, the silhouette, that's a good use of the English language and a metaphor. The difficulty is that does arguably help your position at summary judgment. But if we were to remand this case to go back to trial, the burden then is on your client to prove the Section 1983 violations that you're asserting. So I'm trying to get a sense of recognizing, as we all seem to recognize, that there's a big gap in the evidence, and there doesn't seem to be any way to fill that gap because the parties would have done so before now. Why would remanding this case make sense if it doesn't appear that there's enough evidence for you to prevail, for your client to prevail on the standard of on the burden of proof?
Well, I I don't know that that's necessarily true prior to the court having issued any sort of discovery order or even having engaged in a significant amount of litigation post the filing of the case and then the motion for summary judgment. The court had not even issued a scheduling order. And so things like depositions could absolutely have occurred where the county attorney's office and maybe any records that they have could have occurred as a part of this case and as a part of formal discovery. And that is...
Precluded from seeking that discovery? Were you able to do it before the...
Precluded
from seeking it?
There was nothing that was precluding any efforts, and though the record would not demonstrate as much, certainly some efforts were made. However, one of the issues that we run into is attorney work product was a significant portion of some of the challenges that we had with regard to obtaining the county attorney's notes on the matter.
Those obstacles would still exist if the case were remanded.
Yes, Your Honor. I agree. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you to both counsel. Very interesting case. I don't think I've ever seen a gap in the record that, that matters as much as it seems perhaps does here. Thank you for your briefing and for your argument. This is your first time arguing, you said, on appeal?
No. but I only do about 1 year.
Well, very good. You did fine. The matter is submitted. We will issue our opinion within the statutory period. Thank you.
Thank you.
Nice afternoon.